Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, broadcasting from Seattle, Washington. And on this ID the Future podcast, we have on the show with us Dr. Don Johnson, a scientist who has PhDs in both computer and information sciences from the University of Minnesota and in chemistry from Michigan State University. Dr. Johnson was a senior research scientist for 10 years in pharmaceutical and medical scientific instrument fields and served as president and technical expert in an independent computer consulting firm for many years and taught for 20 years in universities in Wisconsin, Minnesota, California, and Europe. Dr. Johnson now maintains the website scienceintegrity.net to respond to unsubstantiated claims regarding biological origins and Darwinian evolution. He's also the author of the book Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. We've had Dr. Johnson on the show with us in the past to talk about his book, and we have him on the show with us today to talk about his new book, Programming of Life. So, Dr. Johnson, thank you for coming on the show with us.
Well, thank you, Casey, for having me.
We're very pleased about your new book, Programming of Life, which compares the workings of biology to a computer and explains this analogy and this comparison in great detail. But before we get into your new book, I understand that you have updated your previous book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, the original book was actually written in 2008. Published in 2009, and was getting a little outdated, and there's a lot that has happened since then. So the new book, for example, has 49 references from this year in it, and it's updated, including a lot of the information that's in Programming of Life. But I will warn the listeners that it was targeted for scientists, not the layperson that might expect the easier reading that is involved with the Programming of Life book, which is not nearly as mathematically intensive.
And of course, we've discussed your previous book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability, on the podcast because I felt that it was a wonderful introduction to intelligent design. But your new book, Programming of Life, has a slightly different focus. And I'd like you to maybe tell our listeners what inspired your latest book, Programming of Life.
Well, the scenarios that have been proposed for the origin of life and the changes in time of living organisms basically stress the physical scenarios from physical science. And information science really is not addressed in any meaningful way by any of the scenarios that have been proposed. And the idea that somehow physical processes can produce information is nonsense to an information scientist. So I thought those things really need to be addressed because the scenarios that come from the physical domain, physical science domain, have no scientific justification for the information science domain.
Well, let's get into that in a little bit more detail here. Your book quotes Bill Gates, who has a famous statement, of course, about the computer-like nature of DNA. So could you summarize for our listeners, how is the cell like a computer, as you discuss in your book, Programming of Life?
Well, it's not just like a computer. It actually, each cell of the body has thousands or even millions of computers, real computers, biological computers in it, reading the digital memory, transferring digital information. All the functionality of computers is built into every cell of every organism, and so that it really is a network computer system in every cell. And human adult has about 300 trillion cells, so there's a lot of computers in a person's body.
That's absolutely fascinating, Dr. Johnson. And I think that one of the issues you tackle in your book is an important one, sort of a cutting-edge question in biological thinking right now, and that is a question about how do we measure biological information? And there are a number of leading scientists actually now that are starting to say that the classical measurements of information in biology, like Shannon information, are not sufficient to measure biological information. I was wondering if you could explain for our listeners, what is Shannon information, and why is it not a sufficient measure of biological information?
Well, Shannon information is basically probabilistic uncertainty. And, for example, a completely random string has the very highest Shannon information because it's very improbable due to the random sequence. But it has zero functional information. And life consists not only of patterns that are improbable, but also they're functional, and that's basically where I'm coming from. Now, Shannon information is important in life in that it sets limits because Shannon information theory has, for example, the channel capacity theorem that says that it's impossible, mathematically impossible, to transfer reliably information from a alphabet that has fewer basic symbols to one that has more basic symbols. And since the symbols of life are transferred reliably, it's impossible, for example, for there to have been a simpler alphabet of life than the current alphabet of life, because otherwise the Shannon channel capacity would be exceeded, and that's mathematically impossible. And if you go back in time, what that implies is the very first alphabet that was used by life had to be at least as complex as the current alphabet that's used by life. Otherwise, you would have, at some point at least, the Shannon channel capacity being exceeded, which is mathematically impossible.
So you talk in your book about the concept of prescriptive information. What is prescriptive information, and how does it help us to measure biological information?
Well, prescriptive information is not only functional, but it is a recipe. It's a sequence of instructions to perform at some point in time. For example, a computer algorithm is a prescriptive information in that it has the sequence of steps to perform during the execution of the computer program. And the computer programs apply not only to the electronic digital computers, but also the biological computers that are found in life. A recipe, for example, is also prescriptive. And that recipe doesn't necessarily have to be written down. For example, your grandma may have a recipe in her head for making some delicious pie or something, totally non-material as far as the sequence of steps to perform. It's all stored in her brain. And that's a sequence, a prescriptive sequence, that when followed produces a desirable result. And life is filled with such prescriptive instructions that perform utility functional results.
And obviously information, Dr. Johnson, is crucial to the functioning of computers. So as we see the cell more and more as a computer, it of course would be natural that we understand that it deals in the currency of information. You talk in your book about the concept of the cybernetic cut, and this is an interesting concept that I've seen discussed more and more in some of the scientific literature that deals with these issues. Could you explain for our listeners, what do you mean by the term cybernetic cut in your book, Programming of Life?
The cybernetic cut is the transition that you would have to make between something that is purely physical into something that has a formal computational halting of a computer. It's a prescriptive formal utility that is needed in order to accomplish the task. And this occurs not only in electronic computers when you're having a computer program, for example, but in order to make a computer program functional, you have to traverse the cybernetic cut to make it do the functions that are desired. And a similar thing happens in every cell of the body when you're doing communication, control, generation of new proteins, whatever. Every protein, for example, is the result of a prescriptive algorithm that's implemented in the DNA code, sometimes even combined from many different parts of the DNA, but ultimately you end up with a program that has crossed the cybernetic cut in that when that program is executed, the result is a protein.
Why do you argue in your book, Programming of Life, that physical processes are not able to account for the information that we see in life?
Well, information is non-physical. It really is purely formal. It can be stored in physical entities. For example, you can store computer information on a disk in magnetic domains on a magnetic disk. You can store it electronically. You can store it in lots of different physical forms. But the information itself is purely formal. It's non-material. It can be transferred around through wires over the internet, you know, through the air. You can have it transferred and stored and communicated and compressed, and all kinds of other operations are possible on it. But the results of those are stored in physical media in order to store the information and access the information. But the information itself is purely formal. It is non-material. There's no materialistic source of it. There's no materialistic scenario that can generate functional information.
Now, your book obviously talks about attempts by evolutionists to show that Darwinian processes can generate functional information. In particular, it looks at some examples of computer simulations of evolution that purportedly show, as one ID critic put it, design without a designer. So, is it true that computer simulations like, say, Evita can show how you can get design without a designer?
None of them have ever demonstrated that so far, and I don't believe they ever will, because all of the programs that are made to simulate life and things like that, they all have fitness functions that are programmed into the program. What does it mean to be fit? Well, that's determined by a fitness function. They all have targets. What am I looking for? Where am I going? Where am I heading in this? And without the fitness functions and targets that are programmed in by intelligent beings, the programs wouldn't function. So you have the manipulation that's done in the computer programs merely reflect what the designer and the experimenter wants it to perform. And they really don't show anything about undirected processes being able to produce functional information or design-like characteristics. The programs that have been proposed so far, at least, don't demonstrate that you can produce something of functional design based on random processes interacting with computer type of data. It doesn't show that. They always reflect what the designer wanted it to reflect, and they can design it to reflect basically anything they want. All it shows is that an intelligent computer programmer can make a computer program to do what he wants it to do.
What about junk DNA? You talk about this a little bit in your book, Programming of Life. Does junk DNA refute intelligent design?
Junk DNA does not refute intelligent design. In fact, it enhances it. Back in the 70s, one of the chief Darwinian scenarios was the fact that since 98% of the DNA code doesn't code for proteins, it became known as junk DNA. And basically, the junk DNA provided the resource that was supposedly necessary to do the random mutations on the DNA sequence to produce something that would eventually become functional. And so, since 98% of the DNA had no known purpose, it was just assumed to be there so that random mutations could take place, and eventually those random mutations would produce functional proteins that could then be selected and passed on to the progeny. Many studies in the last 10 to 15 years have shown that virtually all of what used to be called junk DNA has functional purpose, that it's absolutely critical for the embryonic development and reproduction and nervous systems and for disease prevention and DNA repair and a whole bunch of other signaling processes. It is absolutely critical. Life would not be the same without the so-called junk DNA. And the evolutionists, interestingly enough, are declaring, well, they never thought of junk DNA as being worthless, that we're misunderstanding what they said. But if you go back and look at what they've said, they did think it was worthless. It was just, you know, useless junk that had no purpose at all. And they have been shown to be absolutely incorrect.
Well, Dr. Johnson, I want to close this up with just a general question about this issue. You've now written two books about the debate over Darwinian evolution and intelligent design. Where do you see this debate going in the coming years?
Well, I think information is the key downfall for the naturalistic scenarios, including Darwinism, that there really is no explanation for information by any of the scenarios that have been proposed so far. And it's very interesting with many of the recent findings with the codes within codes and overlapping codes and various kinds of combining material from information from multiple sections that may be separated by a million nucleotides within the DNA to form messenger RNA for the production of a protein, for example. All of those kinds of things have absolutely no feasible naturalistic sense of how could that happen. And so what I'm gaining insight on here is that many of the papers where it used to be you had to somehow blend in the evolutionary scenario, how could Darwinism produce these things, many of the recent papers don't even touch that because they know that there is no way that those kinds of things could evolve. And so they're looking for other scenarios, and so far nothing they've come up with is feasible. And so I think that people will eventually come to know that there is something beyond pure physicality. So where that leads to intelligent design or something else, that has yet to be determined, but there is something that is inexplicable by physical processes as the only source.
Well, Dr. Johnson, we really appreciate you coming on the show with us here. Again, the book is called Programming of Life, and Dr. Johnson's website is scienceintegrity.net. I understand, Dr. Johnson, that Programming of Life has been doing pretty well on book-selling websites like Amazon.com. Is that right?
Yes, it actually has rated number one in molecular biology for many, many days, and it has been selling very well. I've had some good responses and good reviews, and quite gratifying. I'm glad that people are getting the message, and I hope the message can get out to more people as well.
Well, I agree with you. I think this is a very important message to understand the computer-like and machine-like properties of biology and the implications of that. I mean, are natural processes capable of producing computers or machines? And I think your book does a great job of answering those kinds of questions. So thanks again, Dr. Johnson. It's great having you. Again, the book is Programming of Life. Stay tuned for more on ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.